is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome in, everybody. Tuesday edition of the Lombardi Line. I'm Ben Wilson in for Stormy Bonatoni from downtown Las Vegas, our Circa Sportsbook studio. Michael Lombardi is here. We are about 48 hours out from the start of preseason football with the Hall of Fame game on Thursday. You know it's that time of year, Michael, when you're getting the Aaron Rodgers is upset at his teammates reports in Jets training camp. Always a great headline to kick us off here because you know that stuff is sort of bound to happen this time of year, and we are now fully underway in all these training camps.
And Brock Purdy threw three interceptions yesterday, so
yes,
it must be the end of his career. That's what I read yesterday, you know. So, yeah, I mean, all these evaluations that are ongoing in training camp and who's having a good day and who's not having a good day, I think a lot of that is just noise. But, you know, we listen to it because, look in what do we have, 10 days? August the 8th, that starts it all off, really. I mean, we're going to have a game this for August the 1st, but August the 8th, we have the Carolina Panthers at New England, and we've got Detroit at the Giants. So that's always, I mean, Carolina at the Giants. So that'll be great to get us going and, you know, have football every day on the weekend.
Yes, we will. We have had a lot to fill this summer because we're waiting for football. One of our guests to kick off the show today, he is an expert at talking basically every sport. I've done a bunch of live shows with Will Hill. Great to have Will coming up on the show, kicking off our guest list, 1:30 Eastern from the Shoulda Bet More podcast and frequent VSiN contributor. Then we'll continue our individual team previews today. Michael's burning questions as we'll talk Pittsburgh Steelers. Gary Dulock from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette joins at 2:15 Eastern, then right into Indianapolis camp. Mike Chappell from Fox and CBS in Indianapolis, Colts beat reporter there, joining us at 2:30. But we will begin the show talking a little news or noise.
Is it news?
Corleone is a man who insists on hearing bad news immediately.
Or just noise?
Are you going to act like this is news?
Just noise. Noise.
Let's separate the impactful from the insignificant with one simple question. News or noise?
And a solid list for us today. We'll start with New England camp, where there is actually a sort of news of the day piece to this, Michael, I want to get to in a second, involving one of the key members of the defense and some of the back and forth that happened yesterday in camp. But first off, it's new head coach Gerard Mayo admits that he really hasn't had much communication with Bill Belichick since taking the reins as head coach. Here was the soundbite from Coach Mayo.
Did Bill Belichick reach out to you when you got, after you got the gig, after it was announced?
So that's a tough question. We haven't had a lot of communication since I've been here. And honestly, for me, my focus is the players. It's all about the players. And I learned a lot from Bill. I honestly did. X's and O's, and also, you know, structure and practice and things like that. But like I said, it's a different time. It's a different era. And,
yeah,
and hopefully we can have that same success.
So TLDR, Michael, no, there's not been any communication there.
Well, why would there be? I mean, Bill has basically brought Mayo into the league, let him be the linebacker, taught him how to play the position, brought him into coaching, spent time the last 2 years preparing him to become a head coach. I think the phone rings two ways, you know. I don't think it's a hard question at all. You know, everything that Mayo has done since Bill has left the building is to try to distance himself from Bill. So why would Bill want to call, or why would Bill call? I mean, I think Mayo's going to wish he had called Bill. But Bill's done everything that he could, and that's usually the way Bill operates. He's tried to make other coaches successful, whether it's Brian Daboll, whether it's Josh McDaniels. He's welcomed them in and coached them just like he has Mayo. But now Mayo, as Al Davis used to tell me all the time, Ben, at some point, kids, you're going to have to play in the game, mm-hmm. and Mayo's going to have to play in the game. And we saw yesterday that Judon's not happy with how he's playing the game, and this is going to go and manifest itself forward. Gottschall hasn't done anything at their training camp. They've got a bunch of injuries, some of them self-inflicted, whether it's Barmore coming off of a problem, Tavai having another recurrence of a knee injury. You know, the list goes on and on. So it's going to be fascinating to sit back and watch as you replace the greatest coach of all time with a man with very little experience.
And it also leads into what you just mentioned, the name Matthew Judon, one of the keys to that defensive line and unit as a whole, who yesterday, very, very animated, the report from Mike Rice, Patriot beat reporter for ESPN, talking very, very emotionally with head coach Gerard Mayo, with the new VP of player personnel and Elliot Wolf, and also the director of player personnel, Matt Groh. Contract still up in the air for Gerard Mayo, is one of his top linebackers in Matthew Judon. Yet to get it done, though. And it also kind of speaks to, yeah, it's a new era, right? Would this have happened if Bill Belichick's on the sideline? I kind of think not.
No. Yeah, no, it wouldn't have happened. They would have been way more organized. But look, here's the reality. Judon did a really good job last year of trying to keep the young players in tune, specifically Barmore, who was, you know, kind of get him in line. And really, Judon is responsible for Barmore having this incredible contract, certainly for a guy who's had durability issues throughout his NFL career. So I think Peppers, too, just got a contract extension. Look, they need Judon. They have a ton of cap room, but they have to stand alone. You know, one thing I think you feel, you know, it's always easy to think you can replace a legendary coach. Try.
It's such a good way to look at it for a New England team that has a lot of question marks here in 2024. Final year of a contract calls for a base salary of $6.5 million for Judon, who had the season-ending injury in week four last year. Okay, more news or noise. Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes. This is the quote we have. Not necessarily when the question was, is Patrick Mahomes underpaid? I think we do a great job of managing my money to be able to pay me a lot of money and keep a good team around me. For Patrick Mahomes, who was able to restructure his deal last offseason, and now the $210+ million that he's getting is now coming in. It'll be as late as 2026 as of the current structure of the deal. And Mahomes, something you touched on yesterday, Michael, clearly trying to put team first in this instance and keep Kansas City as competitive as humanly possible going for a third straight Super Bowl.
You know, I think he's such a great teammate. He understands the importance of winning far exceeds individual honors. I wish more athletes had this. Look, he's not underpaid. He's not the highest paid, but he's not underpaid. He knows he can make more money outside the arena of football doing other things, representing Adidas or whatever he does. But to me, winning is all that matters. Look, Dan Marino would trade in everything to have that one opportunity to put a Super Bowl ring on his finger. Something as great as he was, he couldn't do.
For the entire roster for Kansas City, where do you have them power rated 1 to 32 as we start the year?
Well, you know, it starts with the quarterback, and obviously he's the best quarterback in the league. But overall, their talent level, I mean, if you put somebody else behind this offensive line, I'm not sure it would be at an elite level, especially at the tackle position where Taylor, and we're not sure who the left tackle is, whether it's the rookie from BYU or Moses from Oklahoma. So Morris from Oklahoma, excuse me. So I think to me, and the receiving core is average. I think Kelce, whether he can play at his age and his off season, that remains to be seen. I think they're a good roster, certainly, but you know, that cherry on top is called Patrick Mahomes.
And that's what is always fascinating about breaking down Kansas City, how much of a roster ranking is purely just Patrick Mahomes, how much is the rest of a group that has had a lot of holes to fill on, especially on the rest of the offense, like you point out, running back, not anything to get excited about either as you go down the list on KC. Okay, next news or noise piece here as we start the show. Ah, yes, the New York Giants. We're ready. I know you've been excited for the end of the offseason version of Hard Knocks. That is not too far away. We're going to talk some Giants in depth tomorrow. But quarterback Tommy DeVito, that is up to the Giants to make that decision, make that gamble. If they were to cut him for Tommy Cutlets, if they decide to cut me and I get scooped up, I don't get to make that decision to say afterwards if somebody grabs me, no, I want to stay here. It's everything for the front office. Gamble, potentially, for the Giants to cut Tommy Cutlets, Michael.
I don't know if it is a gamble. I mean, here's the reality. They were looking for a backup. They tried to sign Tyrod Taylor back, and they brought in Drew Lock, who, you know, they had Tommy DeVito on the team. Now, you know, understanding they need three, there's no question, because of Daniel Jones's health and durability the last two seasons, or three seasons. He played most of the games in 22. But for me, you know, I think Tommy's getting himself a little bit over his skis. You know, it wasn't exactly... do you want to go back and go through some of those moments where I think they gained minus 9 yards against the Jets in passing? Do you remember that?
How about the panache, Michael, when you're, I guess, a...
the panache, yes.
When you're quarterback of Tommy DeVito's, look, you gotta sell yourself. Look, if this was a team that at least had something to get excited about roster-wise, you would kind of say, okay, what are you doing here? At least because Tommy DeVito, I think he understands. He's like, yeah, there's really not much here we can go off of for the Giants, so I'm going to make my voice heard. This, to me, most fascinating potential news or notes piece, and you mentioned to start the show, Brock Purdy struggles yesterday in training camp, few picks there for San Francisco. This was a interview he had with Mike Silver, the San Francisco Chronicle, saying, I want to be dominant. It's having that Tom Brady kind of feeling late in the game. It always felt like Tom was just going to take over and not make it close. I feel like I can get to that. Always ambitious when you throw the Tom Brady name out there when you're a young quarterback like Brock Purdy. Already the pressure high on a guy who's been so heavily scrutinized, but I thought that was a very interesting quote he gave to one Mike Silver of the San Francisco Chronicle.
I love it because I think there is, when you study him, as good as a year as he had last year, there's room for improvement in terms of accuracy, in terms of his ability with ball location. You know, his decision-making is only going to speed up. He's going to have more rhythm within the framework. You know, Bill Walsh would say, and today we're going to talk about it later in the show, but this is the anniversary of Coach Walsh's death today in 2007, and he would often say, the first year we'll teach the player the system. The second year, we in third year, we develop those skills within the system. And I think Purdy's got a lot of room for improvement on top of how good he's actually been. I mean, he's going to get better and better, and Kyle's going to develop more confidence. And you could see it on the tape. We talked yesterday, Ben, about Jordan Love and Matt LaFleur being worried about him. Kyle, if you watch the play calls of the 49ers, he's not worried about Purdy. He's not hiding Purdy from anybody. He hit Jimmy Garoppolo. He didn't hide Purdy. He hasn't hit Purdy.
That's the thing. The air yards, he's still pushing the ball down the field. It's not simply relying on short passes, receivers doing the rest, and the advanced metrics too. Whether you want to look at the tape, whether you want to look at the data, show Purdy was a legit top five quarterback across the board last year. People still don't want to talk about him that way. Still, it's more like borderline top 10, but a very, very good, confident quote from Purdy to start training camp. We will get into a lot of burning questions today. I'm excited to dive into two teams that are very interesting from the perspective of they could go either way really this year, Pittsburgh and Indianapolis. We'll get into Pittsburgh's burning questions when we come back on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Power ratings, picks, previews, predictions. Pro, as in become a VSiN Pro subscriber and get an all-access pass to our betting tools, betting splits, and the 2024 College Football Betting Guide. Thursday's release of our College Football Guide and our previously released NFL Betting Guide will have you ready to turn a profit on the gridiron this year. And the only way to get the guides and everything we have to offer is to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. And you can do exactly that at vsin.com/subscribe. We'll also have a special release show right before our Lombardi Line edition on Thursday. Release show previewing the College Football Guide. Adam Burke will join me. Really excited for that, Michael. A lot to break down. New teams in the FBS, over 300 of them. Great to break down all of it, just like it is with the NFL. As much as we have fewer teams to focus on, it's that time of year, and it is time for some burning questions. It actually works out really well. We go to the Pittsburgh Steelers today, Michael, and we have some news even breaking as we hit the air today with rookie wide receiver Roman Wilson carted off an apparent ankle injury. And that is one of your burning questions even before this injury happened here for Wilson and the Steelers, with several key position groups looking likely to be relying upon the rookies to start this season.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, the Steelers have always done a great job of developing young receivers. They have. I mean, but it's going to put some pressure, I think, on George Pickens, who's their number one, Van Jefferson, who they signed from Atlanta, Scotty Miller, who they also signed from Atlanta, and then their fourth-round pick last year, Calvin Austin. I mean, those guys are going to have to step up. But I don't think, to me, this is going to be a team that wants to be overly in 11 personnel. I know Arthur Smith took a lot of crap from the analytical community because he was never in 11 personnel down in Atlanta. Well, he really was, because Pitts, when he's on the field, is a tight end. So whether they're in two tight ends with Pitts as one of the tight ends, that's 11 personnel. Pitts isn't a tight end. He's a receiver. So, you know, how you frame it, to me, it depends on the personnel group. But with Freiermuth being as good as he is and them wanting to run the football, strong side and weak side, I think they're going to have to figure out who will be the slot guy. Pickens on the outside, is that going to be Jefferson? And when a guy has an ankle, you feel like you always have a chance to get him back at some point, maybe 3 or 4 weeks. The problem is with rookies, Ben, when rookies miss training camp, it's especially rookie receivers, it's hard to get them inundated into the offense.
Great example we saw a couple years ago, Christian Watson in Green Bay misses most of camp, and it took basically the first two-thirds of the season for him to feel fully integrated, confident in the offense, and that is far from the only example we have seen of that in the past. It leads into, though, the rest of how this offense will look, where offensive line, the pieces they brought in, a lot of very quality pulling guards too, which can help some of that outside zone type action that Arthur Smith wants to bring in as a first-year OC. O-line to me looks pretty solid. Running back is a solid position, but it all always comes down to the quarterback, especially when you're asking Russell Wilson to make plays on the run, and that is your number one burning question, which is probably the only way you can really start when it comes to breaking down Pittsburgh.
Well, yeah, I mean, Russell's numbers have gone dramatically down in play action and RPO game. I think there's no, when you look at it, it's scary. And one of the things I think Russell doesn't do a very good job of is stepping up and working the middle of the pocket. You're going to hear Brady talk a lot about this. Working the pocket, climbing the ladder within the pocket is how big plays get developed, because you're going to have to move. All the great outside rushers we have in the National Football League can be avoided if the quarterback steps up. If Brock Purdy were to step up in the Eagle game, Hassan Riddick would have not hit his elbow. It would not have been a problem. But he kind of didn't climb the ladder in that game, and that's when he got hit. Wilson has not climbed the ladder in 2 and 3 years. I mean, he's looking to go right, left, and get out. That's why his yards per attempt has come way down. I think that's going to be critical for Arthur to get him to get it down the field and make some of these explosive plays, because the Steelers, for as bad as they were offensively last year, they could make some explosive plays with Warren and Pickens.
And it leads into, as well, a team that predicated themselves on ball control, being smart with the football, not turning it over. It's something, when you look at all the close games Pittsburgh played in, the turnover margin is something that really jumps out to you, and it's a question of how can you duplicate that when we know turnovers are so variant year to year.
Yeah, and Russell did a good job last year. Of all the things he didn't do in Denver, the one thing he did do was protect the football. And so that was one of why Denver was able to stay in games. See, I think Pittsburgh's a shining example of how not to lose games. I mean, think about it. You know, they were 30th in drives and ending in turnovers, which is high for a team where they only had 7 fumbles and they only threw 9 interceptions. 16 times they turned the ball over as a team last year. That's pretty remarkable, right? And even though there were a lot of 3 and outs in those drives, you know, they didn't gain any yards. They just at least protected the football. And I think, you know, when they only had 7 games above 20 points, they won all of them. And if this team can get to somehow find a way to score later in the game, and I think Arthur Smith, for whatever we want to say about him, as a head coach, I think he's a good offensive coordinator.
Doesn't the fit, too, as you think about it, it makes a lot more sense than maybe on the surface, where in general Pittsburgh has always wanted to be that physical ground-pound team. As much as Arthur Smith, yes, he does take flack from the analytics community, but he is at least bringing Pittsburgh into the modern age. Still a very run-heavy guy, yeah. But he's run-heavy in a more 2024-esque type of way that's a lot more optimal. Even if the modern numbers say you want to be passing the ball more, it seems like for Pittsburgh, they're always going to be a franchise that wants to bring in a guy who will run the ball more. At least Arthur Smith is doing it in a positive way. He's just not, you know, trucking everybody up the middle and running it right behind the center.
Yeah, I mean, he's not Matt Canada. Matt Canada was not qualified to be an offensive coordinator in the National Football League. I mean, that's pretty clear by his design. I mean, Matt Canada, remember when Matt Canada went to LSU when he was at Pittsburgh? He was at Pittsburgh originally, and they developed that tight end inside shuffle pass that almost beat Clemson down there. And then he got the LSU job, got paid a ton of money, got fired after 7 games at LSU. And then Pittsburgh, for some reason, made him an offensive coordinator with no pro experience at all. And I think that really hurt Matt's career. He wasn't really ready for that job. There was no creativity. There was no ability to design an offense to attack. See, one of the things Pittsburgh didn't do last year was to attack the adjustments within the framework of the defense. That's what good offensive coordinators do. They attack the weakness within the framework of the defense, and I think they will be. The question's going to be, Ben, they're going to have to start 2 rookies in that offensive line. Frazier, their 3rd-round pick, is going to start at center, and Fatua, I think that's how you say his name, Fantui, you know, I think he's going to have to start at right guard. I mean, that's going to be he's going to have to start right tackle. And Fantua, and Troy Fantua from Oregon, he's going to have, and certainly he can. And Broderick Jones, the kid they drafted in the first round. Think about this. They have 1st-round pick in tackles, 2 tackles. They've got 2 free agent signings at the guard, and they have a 2nd-round pick at center. They're going to be better in the offensive line, and maybe Mason McCormick, who's a really good young player, ends up starting in one of those guards. They could have 3 starting offensive linemen as rookies this year, which would set them up for the long haul in a really good way.
Especially when you factor in the rookie development that we have seen Mike Tomlin do such a masterful job of over the last decade and a half plus now for Pittsburgh. And it's why a lot of positional ranking outlets have Pittsburgh as a top 10 unit on the offensive line with a lot to like going into 2024. The big part of the defense that you have question marks of, to me, is the biggest red flag for Pittsburgh. For as much as they have held their hat on the defensive end, it's a secondary where when the front four really didn't get home last year, when opposing quarterbacks had time to throw, no team gave a higher completion percentage up than Pittsburgh. It was a near 63-64% completion rate on throws 10 yards down the field when their front four was not getting home. Secondary, to me, it's clearly bottom half of the league. How can they potentially take a step forward when you think about some of the main guys they have, you know, with a, you know, a young player to Joey Porter Jr. showing flashes last year, having a couple cornerstones, but outside of that, there's just a lot of unknowns for Pittsburgh back in the secondary.
They got to keep Minka Fitzpatrick healthy. I think that's critical, right? Last year he wasn't. They gave up way too many explosive plays. And that's typically not what Pittsburgh is famous for. Pittsburgh will let you drive it down the field. They're trying to get you into a negative play so they can utilize their pass rush and to create a problem because Watt is so good and Highsmith is good on the other side. But they're going to have to stay ahead. The biggest issue was they were in too many, they were giving up too many yards on first down in the run game, and so they couldn't really create a situation where they got negativity. One of the parts about being a great defense is to get to second and 14. And then when you put the pressure on when you do, you can't do what Indianapolis did. Remember Indianapolis on the drive of the game where Houston went down? They had them in a second and 16, but of course they played a soft coverage and they gained 14 yards. Now it's third and two. That's not what you want. You get a team in second and 16, you got to put them away. You can't let that. You can't play soft coverage and let them dink it down for 15 yards. So that's where I think Pittsburgh's going to have to gear it up and really play and get more pressure from the inside to help their two outside guys.
And there's enough to like, too, in general about Pittsburgh. If they were, say, in the AFC South, softer schedule, you'd go, you know what? You could see a path forward. I mean, this is a gauntlet. It's the hardest schedule by opposing win totals in the league. You're in the AFC North, which is so good. And while I have reason to want to get excited about Arthur Smith coming in, I still have Pittsburgh power rated fourth in the division. I have him 10th in the AFC here coming into the start of the year.
Yeah. 10th in the AFC is pretty high, too. You know, but look, they've addressed it. Look, that, you know, with them signing Deshaun Elliott, which will help their run fits, especially early in the season against the run game. They need that. Elliott's a good run defender, you know, and then Dante Jackson's got to come through for him at the corner position.
We'll get Will Hill's thoughts on the Pittsburgh Steelers, what he thinks, his outlook on the Steelers in 2024, as well as the Colts, our other team of the day. We'll get to Michael's burning questions on in a little bit. Will Hill, VSiN contributor from the Should Have Bet More podcast, joins us right after this here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Right now, check out our new look, VSiN.com, optimized for mobile and full of best bets, betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by states, betting tools, and betting guides. Right now on VSiN.com, check out Steve Mackinnon's Hall of Fame game betting preview. It's already out. He's got all the trends, all the information on who to expect to play. We'll break that down a little bit more in depth as we get in closer to Thursday's kickoff from Canton, Ohio. Would you believe this, Michael? The highest total since 2000 in the Hall of Fame game, 37.5, back when the flying St. Louis Rams at the high-powered offense were in the game against the Dolphins in 2001, but that game went under, and it is why we've seen totals really, really trend toward the under in that game in years past.
I mean, let's think about this, right? It just say Caleb Williams doesn't play. And there's probably a good chance he won't play if he does a series, right? And we're into the, you know, Davis Mills, Case Keenum era down in Houston, which they should move the football, right? But you got to believe Houston wants to work on their run game. It was so bad last year. I can't imagine that Tyler Badgett's going to lead them to any points, right? And then, you know, where they go after they pull him from the game. The offensive line for the Bears, their starters are very questionable. So that means their backups have even more questions to them. Houston's not going to start their offensive line, which means their backups aren't going to be good. See, this is the problem and why the scores are so low is because No, most teams don't have five good offensive linemen, let alone 10.
Sure.
And in preseason, you need to have at least 12 good offensive linemen if you're trying to evaluate a backup quarterback, particularly because he's going to be running for his life, because the defensive players are always better than the offensive players in these games. So that's why I think the under is certainly in play here.
What is most notable to me, too, about the quarterback breakdown, all four quarterbacks that could potentially suit up for Houston, all of them have more career starts under their belt than the four quarterbacks on the Bears roster combined, with what we're going to see a lot of Tyson Bagent go to the Brett Rypien, Austin Reed experiment. Quarterback definitely edge on the Houston side, but it is breaking down the backups that is so important about these preseason handicaps. At least, well, hey, one team that does not have question marks about the offensive line, as we get into Michael's burning questions, our second team today, it's Indianapolis Colts. That is one area we don't really have a ton of questions on. O-line, running back, very, very solid for Indy. But the big storyline is, what will we see? How aggressive running the ball will the Colts be with their quarterback, Anthony Richardson, coming off of an injury in which he got four starts in his rookie campaign, showed flashes of brilliance in them, was also inconsistent as a passer, and how close to 100% will he be now coming back into the Shane Steichen offense, Michael? So much to unpack there on the Richardson front as camp opens.
You know, but look, let's just put this in perspective. Okay, and I think this is a positive towards the Colts. Elliot, this is a real positive. Last year, they are a completed pass, a Gardner Minshew accurate pass from beating the Houston Texans. This year, Gardner Minshew is in a battle with Aiden O'Connell, and all indications are Aiden O'Connell is going to be the starter. What does that tell us about Gardner Minshew? What does that tell us about maybe how bad the Colts were, but yet the coaches helped Gardner Minshew look a lot better than he really was? I think it's a tribute to Shane Steichen here, don't you, Ben? I mean, the fact that this Gardner Minshew that gets $15 million guaranteed and the Raiders sign him as their starting quarterback and he can't beat out Aiden O'Connell, who couldn't complete a pass for three quarters against the Kansas City Chiefs. I mean, who couldn't score a point against the Minnesota. I mean, anytime he played a defense that was bringing blitzes from different places, he struggled, you know, against the Chargers when the Chargers had basically quit on Brendan Staley. It was easy through for whatever he did. It made his whole year. So for me, the more I watch the Raiders and I listen to Gardner Minshew and saying he's not going to beat out O'Connell, I'm saying I think Steichen should have been coach of the year last year based on what he was almost able to accomplish.
And Minshew ends up.
So now.
Yeah. 22nd in the completion percentage. Completion percentage over expectation, EPA per play, whatever metric you want to look at. Minshew, bottom 10 quarterback last year. The stats don't lie on Minshew's limitations.
How did he get money? How did he get that much money? It's remarkable. Look, I always thought Minshew was a middle reliever. You bring him in, he plays game 6, 7, and 8. You know, maybe you can win two of them, but the more he plays, the less effective he becomes. The more innings pitched, the less effective. And so let's get back to Richardson. Like, if Richardson's just half as good as his talent indicates he can be, this Colt team could be really good this year. Now, I worry about their pass defense tremendously, right? Because I think what Will Hill said is so damn true, right? Look, they gave up 350 to Derek Carr, 337 to Stroud, 303 to O'Connell. I mean, O'Connell threw for 286 against them. Think about at home, like on their own field, he threw for 286. How good are they if they can't rush? So my concern isn't Richardson for the Colts. It's Gus Bradley and his defense.
And now I look at the positional rankings too. I mean, hard to find a reason to believe Indianapolis is not a bottom five secondary this year. We're in that mark across the board, especially if you look down the stretch with some of those passing numbers against them last year. And think about the division they're in, too, where you expect, I mean, you think about if you're viewing this AFC South as being relatively wide open, you have a Houston offense that is predicated on the deep ball, high explosive plays down the field, a Jacksonville team with a very aggressive play caller in Doug Peterson who will want to push the ball downfield with a newly extended Trevor Lawrence at quarterback. And even Tennessee, a team that we figured to look vastly different than the just pure ground and pound game under Mike Vrabel the years past, now with a offensive-minded head coach as a former OC and Brian Callahan. Like, if you want to win this division, you're going to have to limit the explosive plays on the back end of the ball. And that's where, to me, my biggest concern comes in on Indy when you think about the pure competition they have within their division. It's a lot of high-powered passing attacks.
No question. You know, and can Bradley have anything in his arsenal to make the adjustment? Does he have anything within his framework of his defense to give them some help? And you know, and Chris Ballard, who we had on the pod, he was clear. I mean, he stuck with, he was going to play the guys. He signed players back once he didn't get anybody. Now, I mean, I think Latua is going to be a really good player, but is, can we expect him to carry the load as much as that? I think that's rather unrealistic, don't you?
Yeah, it's, you're talking about a rookie, just assuming you're going to come in and, granted, he's the second favorite on a lot of the odds boards to be rookie of the year, Latu coming out of UCLA, but it's a big ask to come right away and say, oh yeah, you're just going to step in and fortify a unit. The news too yesterday, if you missed that, Samson Ebukam, he's out for the year already, Achilles tear, a brutal break for a guy who has been a really solid core of that defensive line. So automatically, we always are talking about depth here, Michael. As much as the front line looks really good for Indy, there is some question too on how much depth really is there now that you lose a key rotational guy.
No question. And, you know, and everything we talked about, the two teams that play this style of defense ranked 22nd and 23rd, the Colts and the Bears, in defensive acumen last year. And both of their defensive front, the Bears specifically, I mean, Sweat led their team in sacks with 6.5. There's no one else in the defensive front for the Bears that could actually really give Sweat some help. That no three technique, no nose tackle. The Bears have been on Madden football. They've been trying to sign every receiver. I mean, look, they were willing to trade up for Rhone Odunze. You know, forget about Byron Murphy. They never even entertained the thought of having a three technique or Latua having another edge. They wanted another receiver even after they signed Keenan Allen, even after they traded for DJ Moore. So, you know, they're playing Madden. I don't know how they're going to get it all done because they can't rush the passer either.
Sure thing. The linebacker core, too, from that perspective, there's a big gap between what the linebackers look like in run defense versus pass defense, where, you know, granted, Zaire Franklin led all linebackers in the league, had 132 solo tackles last year. He also missed among the most of anybody in the league. And he, EJ Speed, those guys were solid. You look at the run pass splits, really good against the run, but you just question already with the weak secondary behind him, they were average at best in pass coverage last year.
Well, they're spot droppers. They don't read coverages. They're not pattern readers. They don't really play. They never want to gauge in man. They want to spot, read the quarterback's shoulders, and then break on the football and use their team speed. It's about the ball, the ball, the ball. They want to create turnovers. The, you know, one thing about Eberflus and Bradley, they don't care about yards. They care about how many turnovers do we get. And when you look at it, that both teams were not great at creating turnovers because they lack team. Turnovers are created by team speed. That's where turnovers are. When you're fast on defense and your defensive linemen chase the ball from behind, they tackle, they make a collision, there comes a fumble. And that team speed is really when you look at the fumbles created. But Indy doesn't have enough team speed in their front to really say, oh, wow, we're going to create turnovers.
I certainly believe the gap is a lot tighter than people would think in the AFC South between team 1-3. I still have Indy third, though, as far as, you know, my ratings still open up the year. Granted, most favorable strength of schedule based on opposing win totals, but third toughest rest edge this year. A lot of short weeks, a lot of games against teams with extra rest are coming off bye. And when you talk about a division that's that tight, you think about the specific weakness relative to strengths of other teams in their division. It's why, as much as I want to get behind Indy, I love the excitement of Anthony Richardson. I'm just not totally sold yet in this second year for Shane Steichen.
You're not going to get me sold on the defense, but I am sold on Steichen, because if you can win that many games with Gardner, who can't beat out Aiden O'Connell, I'll give you that one.
Yeah, like an 8.5, that feels spot on as far as a win total team that should be right there threatening for one of those wild card spots, possibly a division as well in 2024. A lot to get to in hour number two. We'll revisit some top headlines and set up our hour two guests when we come back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We are releasing our VSiN College Football Betting Guide this Thursday. This guide is your ultimate resource for the upcoming college football season, including previews of all 134 teams, a preseason top 25, power ratings, proven betting systems, and more. And if you sign up before the end of the day tomorrow, you receive both the college football and NFL betting guides, plus full VSiN Pro access and access to all of our daily pro picks 24/7 video all the way through the Super Bowl at an early bird discount price of just $175. Or sign up on a monthly subscription and you get your first 30 days for only $19 to see everything VSiN has to up your betting game. Do not miss out on these preseason deals. Visit vsin.com/subscribe to sign up today. That is vsin.com /subscribe. Excited to dive into a lot of college football stuff here later in the week. Right now, though, back with Michael Lombardi. I'm Ben Wilson in for Stormy. We've got a lot of NFL headlines to get into. Two teams here with Michael's burning questions today, the first of which, the Pittsburgh Steelers. And a lot going on at camp right now. It's an exciting time. You're not at all just sitting around waiting if you're a Steelers beat reporter right now. And that's why we've got Jerry Dulac kind enough to join us right now as we go out to the Progressive Guest Line out in Latrobe, PA, where Steelers camp is underway. Jerry, thank you so much for coming back with us here on the Lombardi Line. The injury piece from today is the rookie Roman Wilson leaves camp carted off with an ankle injury. As far as the expectation of his role in the offense to start out in, on an offense where we figure there's going to be some rookies that are heavily relied upon here early, Jerry, what's kind of been your expectation on Wilson? How was he being used early on before this injury kind of dampened his progress here earlier today?
Well, fellas, good afternoon. I do not know the extent of his injury, not yet. So it's hard to say how long he might be out. I will tell you that they really like Roman Wilson. He's like a Hines Ward type. He's not as thick as Hines Ward was, but, you know, he was known for his blocking ability. He's known for his ability to catch the ball in traffic. We saw that in college, and that's what they really liked about this guy. I think his size is one of the reasons why he didn't go higher in the draft. But when you watch his tape, it's very impressive. And so, you know, is he ready to be their number two receiver? No. I think as of right now, that role will probably fall to Van Jefferson, who, you know, has a chance to be a decent performer in this offense. But, you know, there's been a lot of talk, of course, during the offseason about the Steelers' interest in Brandon Ayuk. I've never thought that trade was going to happen only because of how much the 49ers were asking. But, you know, when you lose Deontay Johnson, who is a proven quality NFL receiver, and you don't have a guy of that ilk to go along with George Pickens, who's only in his third year, to me, that's a deficiency then. That's a step down for their wide receiver core, pending on what happens with the guys they brought in, Kez Watkins, Van Jefferson, you know, and Roman Wilson. We'll have to see how that plays out once they start playing games.
Hey, Jerry, thanks for joining us. Really appreciate it. You do a great job in Pittsburgh, always have. I've always enjoyed reading you. The offensive line, will we see three rookies start in that offensive line, or will Mason McCormick not be able to win a starting job?
Yeah, Mike, it's always good to be with you. I hope you're doing well. I don't think you're in the first preseason game, I don't think you're going to see any rookies start. Let's start at center. Nate Herbig is starting there now. All during the offseason when Omar Khan was asked about, look, you don't have any centers. He goes, look, Nate Herbig's a center, can play center, and that's where they have him now. Eventually, look, they didn't draft Zach Frazier to lead the band at halftime. They drafted him, and he will eventually move in there. Same with Troy Fontano. Look, Dan Moore, despite what some people hear, think about him, and I don't mean the Steelers, I just mean fans. This guy has started at left tackle, you know, Mike, most important position on the line since day one of his rookie year, and he won't be re-signed because they're going to put Broderick Jones at left tackle and Troy Fontano is going to be at right tackle. They're going to let Dan Moore go in free agency because he'll get a monster contract as a starting left tackle in 4 years in the NFL. Somebody will sign him to a big deal. Eventually, I don't think they're going to wait very long for Troy Fontano, though. I mean, he is very good. His technique is very good. Could see it already. And I don't think that Mason McCormick is going to be a starter this year at all. But I was talking to some of the coaches today, and they really like him. They're surprised he moves as well as he does. The tape that they saw of him in college, they thought he played stiff, even though they liked him, but they thought he played stiff. But apparently he was playing with some type of neck brace that kind of made him look like he was stiff. But he's been very, very athletic here so far, and they like him. I don't think he's going to start this year. James Daniels, the free agent after the season. And so long as they like what they see in Mason McCormick, I think it's going to be a year before he moves into that role.
breaking down the different positional battles here, especially on the offensive line with Jerry Dulac. You can follow at Jerry Dulac, D-U-L-A-C, from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. The quarterback situation is what everybody is wondering and talking about. With the Russell Wilson-Justin Fields combination, we've seen Wilson suiting up in pads. It's been hilarious seeing the Mike Tomlin, the response to the question about the reps. Vintage Tomlin here. How has it gone early on? What are kind of the early reports as far as how these two are fitting into a new offensive system with Arthur Smith that is certainly still predicated on running the ball, but running the ball in a much more 2024-esque manner that's a little bit more forward-thinking than the Steelers have had in the past?
Certainly the most curious element of what has transpired with the quarterbacks in the first week is the fact that after bringing in a new training staff and on the first day of conditioning drills, that they would have any quarterback participate in pushing a heavy sled, let alone a 36-year-old quarterback. I get offensive linemen, I get defensive linemen, but in all sports, you have specific training for specific players, specific positions, specific sports. Why they would have Russell Wilson pushing a heavy sled and tweaking his calf is just beyond me. So it's kept him out of the team drills. He got out there today for a little bit, and he's fine. They're not concerned at all. They're just being careful. But he was participating in every individual drill and moving, doing the pocket drills for the footwork. There's no issue with his calf. It's tweaked, but it's not anything serious. And he seems to be fine, and they know he's fine. But it has given Justin Fields a lot of reps, in the first week. But what you see from Justin Fields, fellas, is what you probably would expect. That when he has single coverage down the sideline, he could really throw that football. He throws a few dimes. It has thrown a few dimes that are very impressive. But when he has to, go over the middle, you can see he's a little uncertain, and that's always been the problem with him in Chicago. Not always sure what he's looking at, but there's no question. We saw it again today in their 7-on-7 shots drill. A little play action runs around the end. His ability to run is a big weapon. And even though Russell Wilson is going to be the quarterback, I'm curious to see if they will come up with a couple plays, to use Justin Fields, maybe 2-point conversions during the season. That's something that Mike Tomlin has never really believed in. Mike Tomlin never really believed in taking his starting quarterback out of the game. But when you got a guy like Justin Fields, what the heck? What you've been doing hasn't gotten you any playoff wins, so you might as well try something a little different.
What does the Arthur Smith offense look like to you compared to what you were watching from Matt Canada? I know it's way different, Jerry, but how much different is it?
Well, we're going to find that out in the games, but there is no question that Arthur Smith wants to be very physical, Mike. And, when he was hired, I talked to Mike Mularkey. I talked to Ken Wisenhunt. I talked to Mike Munchak. These are all guys in Tennessee. All you need to know about Arthur Smith is he was hired by Mike Munchak, and three other coaches retained him on their staff, the next three, Wisenhunt, Mularkey, and then Mike Vrabel. That's how highly those coaches think of Arthur Smith. And, he's going to feature the tight ends. He wants to run the ball. He wants to be a physical guy. And their two running backs are physical running backs. So you saw what he did with Derrick Henry in Tennessee. And Najee Harris is the closest thing in this league to Derrick Henry with his power. And so to me, you would think Najee Harris is the perfect fit for Arthur Smith's offense. But I will tell you, they like Jaylen Warren a great deal. Jaylen Warren has proven to be a better pass catcher and pass protector. Not that Najee Harris isn't, but that's where he's been very productive. And they use those backs. They're 1 and 1A. That's not number one and number two. That's 1 and 1A. And I expect those backs, and you see the attention they've paid to the offensive line. I expect those backs in that power running game will be the feature for them.
Always great to get the insight from Jerry Dulac. Great stuff, Jerry. Really appreciate it.
All right, fellas, good chatting with you.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure when Jerry joins from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Follow him at Jerry Dulac. We'll continue the guest role, and we'll jump into our other team with burning questions for the day today, the Indianapolis Colts, as Mike Chappell joins us from Indy when we return.